Let's see. Let's talk about your year. You were in school over in Africa. Can you talk about what that was like?
Well, it was a small rural public school that we went to, and there's about 750 kids there.
How was it different from going to school in Petersburg?
It was a British system of school, so we had uniforms, and there was a lot of rules, and it was pretty strict and everything.
And your coursework, what was that like?
Well, it was fairly easy. The teachers were pretty poorly trained, and they didn't have a lot of resources, so that was kind of hard. But
how was it for you adjusting to the culture, getting to know different languages, getting to know your way around different places? And
well, it was really good. The people are all really nice there. School was in English, so we didn't really have to learn. It wasn't really pressure to learn Zulu, although we did learn some. So.
And how about your daily home life? What was that like? And how was that different from living here in Petersburg?
Well, we were living in a hospital. Well, not in a hospital, next to a hospital. So we would see all the patients go by, and we were right by a bus stop, so there was a lot of vendors. It was kind of a market right next to our house.
And how about, did you stick out in this place? Did everyone know you were from Alaska?
Oh, yes. Everybody knew we were the foreigners, and my blonde hair really stuck out in school and stuff.
But people were welcoming to you there. And
yeah, everybody was really nice and good.
And it looks like, just from looking at your blog and your website, that you had some amazing experiences. What stood out for you in terms of your travels, in terms of what you saw during your year over there? What were some of your favorites?
Well, just getting to know the people and the culture was really the best part for me. And everybody's really amazing. And also, the animals, going to the game parks was really fun.
You got to see gorillas, it looks like, and elephants and giraffes. And
yeah. We took a trip up to Uganda at the end, and that's where we saw the gorillas, and that was really amazing, too. So that was a good end to our year.
But what else did you have to deal with that someone in Petersburg wouldn't be thinking about? Were there creatures or bugs or diseases? How is it?
The monkeys are pests there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, they come in and steal food, and they're just a big pest. And the spiders were really big there, too, which was really gross.
Ellie, for you, what grade were you in, and tell me about your school experience over there.
I was in 8th grade, and that was part of the high school there. Like Caddy said, we wore uniforms, and it was really strict. And
a much different scene than Petersburg Middle School then for you?
Yeah, it was very different.
Were you able to keep up with the schoolwork pretty well? And
yeah, it wasn't hard, right? It was very simple.
And very strict to what happened to you. Did they hit your hands with the ruler, or was it?
No, they give you, like, merits, like points and or demerits, and at the end of the year it's all totaled up to see how well you did. And
talk me through your, like, your daily routine. What was that like? When would you get up in the morning, and did it very far to get to school, and making lunch for yourself? What take me through a day in your life over there.
Well, school was about half a mile away, so it was easy to walk. It started early. It started 7:15, 7:30.
How about, did you make friends when you were over there? Or?
Yeah, I made a lot of friends. It was good to meet the people and everything.
What were your favorite experiences from this trip, either in travels or in living in the community? Or?
I definitely liked meeting people and making friends.
Cool. Lori, just take us through the basics. Where you were and how long you were over there and everything.
Well, we were in a little town called Oshawe, which is on the east coast of South Africa. And we were there for a year, and we were living inside the sort of compound of the hospital. So that was very different. We got a little tired of looking at barbed wire and security guards and gates and things, but that's the way people live there, and that was a little hard to get used to, very different than Petersburg. For sure.
And were you, what were you doing over there, running the household? Were you working at all? Or
I wasn't working. I was running the household. I did some volunteering. I read with some kids at a little elementary school where the kids coming in were all Zulu and didn't speak English, but the school was being taught in English. And so reading with the kids, first through third graders, I would take little small groups with them and read with them and work on English, and they would always talk to me in Zulu and try to get me to learn a few words here and there, too.
What were your impressions of the differences between that school system versus what we have here in Petersburg? And
oh, gosh. They're very different. And, you know, they're very low on resources. They're very, very centralized. The national government writes all their textbooks and enforces what they teach. And as Kati said, the teachers really aren't very well trained. And, you know, parents were never welcome. I never went into a classroom. I never actually stepped inside the school except in the foyer where the office was, because they're just not welcome there.
How about cultural differences you saw? What was your daily life like?
Cultural differences are very profound. There's still a huge racial divide in that country. It hasn't been very long since apartheid fell, and, you know, there's a huge divide between the wealthy and the poor as well. And I spent some time volunteering with a woman who hands out food and things, and I really saw some very, very poor, which is really how most people live there. The unemployment's very high, and they just... the poorest of the poor there are just like nothing that we even see.
Race, is it big on people's minds? I mean, it's not, like you said.
It is. It's a big issue all the time there, and people still remain very segregated, even though it's not the law anymore, obviously. They don't have to be, but people do remain very segregated.
What were your standout experiences, either in daily living or some of the travels that you got to do?
Oh, gosh, there were so many. We did see some amazing things, just so many amazing animals, all kinds of wildlife. But living with monkeys in your yard is just a really fun experience. That was really fun to see. And then having some opportunities to see, to go out into the rural areas and see some how people are and try to help a little bit with that.
I realized being there and doing some of the work we did is that coming from what I now call the land of plenty here in the U.S., very often you get together like with a church group of women or something and you're going to make clothes and send them off to Africa. And you kind of sit there and think, gosh, is this really going to help? Is this really going to go anywhere? Because it's hard for us to even imagine. And after being over there and seeing some of that stuff come in and where it went, the answer is yes, it really does help and it really does go somewhere. And there really are people that's all they have to wear or use or whatever. And so those kinds of things really do make a difference.
What were the biggest number of health problems that were coming in front of you?
Well, you know, we see a whole variety of things, you know, sort of like we do here, but there it's, the volume is just very high. And so I was sort of in charge of a surgical ward, so I saw a disproportionate amount of trauma and surgical cases. And, of course, all of us dealt with a lot of obstetrics, a lot of babies needing to be born, and a lot of high-risk situations as far as that was concerned. And I think in the middle of it all, the biggest thing we see is HIV and AIDS-related illness.
Would you talk about that a little bit more? How big of a problem is that for that part of Africa?
It's huge. I mean, it's huge. In the last, you know, 15 years, that society has gone from a prevalence of HIV of less than 1% up to 18 to 20%. In the adult population, it's like 26, 28%. Young adults, and that's just, you know, in our prenatal clinics, for example, we had HIV rates of 40 to 50%, if you can believe that. And now, since they're far enough into the epidemic, of course, you're seeing people developing AIDS, the end stages of their infection. It usually takes about 8 to 10 years from the time of infection to the time of death in the absence of any treatment. And so the number of people coming in with very severe, you know, immune deficiency related infections is extremely high. And so, you know, our medical wards would have 80 to 90% AIDS patients on them, and they were bursting at the seams.
Did you see anything in terms of prevention or awareness of the problem?
Well, I think that's a good question. I mean, we saw some things, but certainly given that they have ongoing, you know, high rates of new infections, you'd have to say that it's not enough. I think they're really failing in this regard, and I think they know it, but they're having a hard time, you know, grappling with it, especially in South Africa. You know, we contrast that with Uganda, where we were for the last 2 weeks before we came home, and AIDS awareness and HIV awareness there is much, much greater. There's a much greater discussion of it. You see it on billboards, and people are more likely to talk about it, whereas in South Africa, the stigma is so high that I'd have patients that would deny even wanting to be tested, even if they were, you know, on their deathbed and really needed some form of treatment. It's a remarkable thing.
And that's a cultural problem?
I think so. I think it really gets down to in issues of leadership, both at the community and national level, of being able to deal with this. You know, Nelson Mandela, you know, looks back now and in the early stages of the post-apartheid government that he was leading, he regrets not dealing with it in a more proactive way. And so he's gotten more involved. But the government itself, the health department, there's just not been enough resources that have gotten at issues of behavior and behavior change to really reduce rates to any great degree. I mean, it's an ongoing and severe tragedy.
If for the people who are willing to face the possibility of being infected, is there any treatment being done? Are the drugs available? Is the funding available to pay for the drugs?
There is. The programs, you know, PEPFAR, which is the United States program, the President's Emergency Program for AIDS in Africa, AIDS programs in Africa, provides for a lot of the HIV or antiretroviral drugs in Africa. The problem is really the personnel to administer it properly. And so there's a lot of delays in getting into the program. It's only been around for about 2 years. There's been a lot of criticism for the delays in even offering treatment, which is really critical if you want people, you want to convince people that they need to be tested. You have to have some benefit for being even tested amongst this population. So, yes, you can get into treatment. The treatments are very sort of basic by our standards, but they are available and they are effective.
For your day-to-day work environment, walk people through what that was like. You mentioned you were dealing with a lot of trauma patients and that kind of thing. It sounds like you had a big workload. Did you have enough equipment to deal with it and enough help to make it happen?
Well, an average day is we would show up and the doctors would gather and the call team overnight would pass off patients, and a lot of the trauma-related patients are people who would have active needs the following morning. And so I would go and do rounds on anywhere between 25 and 40 patients before heading down to clinics or the ER to do further work. And so, you know, they are very limited in terms of their equipment, very limited in terms of referral networks. We did not, for example, have a CT scanner, and so it was very difficult to get CT scans done on patients with severe head injuries, for example. So this was a common scenario where you really had to beg and plead and pull out all the stops just to get a CT scan done on somebody that really needed it. So the referral system is very limited there. So, yeah, and even the nursing training, the nurses have really basic training there. So a lot of the work was and time was spent sort of teaching nurses on how to do a better job at taking care of a lot of things that the doctors simply don't have time to do.
Yeah, with that kind of a workload, are you just, you have only a limited amount of time to deal with each patient, I imagine.
That's exactly right. So, I mean, you can see up to 60 or 80 outpatients a day, and it's just, so it's extremely limited. And you can imagine most of these people, their only language is Zulu, and so I would rely a lot on the nurses for translation. And so there's always a time delay there, and there's a lot lost in translation, especially when you're in a hurry.
How about some of your favorite experiences? I was reading that blog entry about the silverback gorillas just now, and it seems pretty extraordinary. Tell people about that, or other ones that stick out for you?
Well, that was a really special experience. We had talked about doing something before we came home, and we decided as a family to go see the gorillas in Uganda, and we were able to get passes. It's very limited the number of people that they allow to actually hike in and see the gorillas. And so this was just a spectacular experience. We happened to be camping in a place where even after our day's hike in to see the gorillas, we were visited upon by a different family that came and foraged around our tent, literally. And they were swinging from the trees and foraging through the brush in front of us. And it was just spectacular. I think for me, I think one of the greatest things is being able to sort of witness and have your children witness what a large part of the world lives like, you know, especially situations of extreme poverty. And I think, you know, you do realize how fortunate you are almost by luck of the draw. And I think that it really compels people that sort of there is this sort of moral tug to sort of think about what we can do or what we can do to improve the lives of others in ways that we have control over, you know, and whatever that might be. I think from my standpoint, that was the greatest thing about having the children come and doing it at this time in our lives to be able to do it was great.